here in Charlotte, North Carolina, as well as the enslaved African peoples who served this land. So to respect the labor and this earth that has been so beautifully maintained for us, to have this privilege to sit and serve in these ways. So I welcome you. And it would be so lovely if you were willing to kind of put in the chat where you are. I know this is a global Sangha, which is so precious and rare, actually, to be able to participate in. So it would be lovely if you were to include that in the chat so I can get a feel for how large our community is here today. And welcome, welcome, welcome. You're all welcome here. I wanted to start off by telling a story. And it's a story that I first heard from Michael Mead, who's this beautiful soul and mythologist that I've studied with over the years. And he tells, he offers his wisdom up in the form of stories. And it just seems to me that when you dig deep enough into why stories, you find this thread that really speaks to a lot of our hearts, and especially at this time. So I'm going to read the story and then talk a little bit about it and then invite your engagement around it. So just get comfortable and I'll read this to you. So it's an odd beginning in which it doesn't say once upon a time. It starts with this time, whatever this time mean to the person hearing it. And let's just say every human born is always looking for knowledge. And as it turns out, the real knowledge is available in a cave that is nearby here. They always say that here. And the strange thing is no one ever makes it to the cave. Everybody now rushing this way and that on highways and byways, and even internet highways. And no one makes it to the cave, the place where the knowledge we're looking for happens to be. But if you found the cave, inside the cave, you would find an old woman. And the old woman is sitting in the cave, and she's weaving the most beautiful garment that anyone has ever seen. And she has been working on it for a long time. And because she wants it to be so beautiful, she's making the hem of the garment out of porcupine quills. And in order to weave them into the garment, she has to bite down on the quills to flatten them. And she's been biting down on quills for so long that she's worn her teeth down to where they're just nubs sticking above the gums. But still, she keeps weaving this beautiful garment. And every once in a while, she has to stop weaving and go to the back of the cave. And in the back of the cave, there is fire. And some people say that this fire is the oldest thing in the world. And hanging over the fire is a cauldron. And in the cauldron is a stew that includes all the seeds of all the plants and all the bushes and all the grains and all the fruit trees that have ever been grown on earth. And if she doesn't go back and stir the soup of all the seeds, then the fire will get too hot and it will burn the seeds and we won't have the natural world. And so she puts down the garment and goes back to stir the seeds. But while she's moving slowly to the back to stir the soup of all the seeds. A hungry dog suddenly appears, and the hungry dog sees a loose thread of that beautiful garment, and it begins to pull on that thread. And he keeps pulling until the whole garment is unraveled and nothing is left but a massive mess lying on the floor of the cave. So that when the old woman comes back and she sees all of her work turned into chaos on the floor, she stands for a minute to consider. And then she sits down. No one knows what she's thinking or what she might say about it. But eventually she picks up a loose thread. And as soon as she picks up that thread, she sees the image of a more beautiful garment that she could weave, an even greater garment. And she begins to weave that new garment out of the chaos of the previous garment. And as the elders say, and a lot of people say, damn that dog for unraveling everything. But they also say, and wisdom would say, this world has to come apart once in a while. Otherwise, it will come to an end altogether. Because the old woman is the old woman of this world, the one who is manifesting the world, if she ever came to the end of the garment, it would be the end of the world. Therefore, be thankful when things fall apart. And when you have the chance, calm yourself, look at the chaos, pick up a loose thread, and help the woman who is weaving the world again and again. And the story ends. But does it? So, this is a small story, yet it carries many layers. And you don't need to grasp the whole tale. Rather, it's more about letting one detail about the story that strikes you be your thread. And this detail becomes the thread. Or something we can follow back into ourselves to more deeply understand. This story has an odd beginning in which it doesn't say once upon a time. It starts with this time. So what is it about this time that we're living that speaks in this story? This time in our lives, where noise is everywhere, we have the puppetry of politics dressed up like clowns in theater. We have public violence, flagrant racism, global wars. We're navigating in our day-to-day walk, many of us are, the swings and whiplash between corruption and innocence, clarity and cruelty, wisdom and irrationality, kindness and wickedness. This threat of the outsider who we consider and who we consider our neighbors. And we're navigating a sense of distance and intimacy with each other, receptivity and force. Our screens are flashing and headlines are screaming. Social media is a marketplace of emotions, where fear sells fast, and our attention is the price that's being paid. So, in this swirl of intensity and outrage that many of us are facing, we can be pulled into believing that we're strangers and that we're divided. But the fact that we are disturbed is really a statement about our kinship and our reliance on each other and relationship to each other. And it's kind of odd to think about that. The story tells of the world unraveling into chaos and then being rewoven into beauty, and it's an old tale. This time we're in, while it's different, is not the first time. We can look at history to see the fact of suffering and beauty as a noble truth. But to know this intimately, to know this directly, to have this insight, we must first be willing to enter the cave, which is nearby. Yet, no one makes it to the cave, the place where the knowledge we're looking for happens to be. Or maybe we don't go to the cave often enough. And inside this cave, as the story was telling us, she's not just an old woman, she's a wise woman, diligently weaving this beauty. And she has this great compassion for the world for many lifetimes over. The story names three great movements that we might recognize in our own lives: the movement of creation, beginning with the weaving, destruction, where it's unraveled, and sustaining, which is what keeps the fabric of life alive. And we might call that faith. The story also reminds us that we cannot live in endless creation, that there are times when we must rise, stretch our bodies, turn our backs, and enter and ensure the seeds of the next generation are well attended. And while we are diligently caring for those seeds, we can't possibly know what may happen next. So the hungry dog of chaos comes to everyone. In our world today, we can see it in these collapsing democracies, fractured politics, unraveling ecosystems, and systemic hatred and harm. We can see this all around us. We can also see in our fear and aversion, oppression of dark and black bodies throughout the world, evident in global wars and civil distress. The hungry dog of chaos also may come with the confusion and often overwhelm inherent in disappointment, grief, loss, frustration. Sometimes in getting what we want, and in sometimes not getting what we want. So the hungry dog of chaos is to be expected. It's dukkha. And how we respond is our challenge. And how did the wise woman respond when she returned and saw her life's her generations of work in a pile on the floor? What did she do? She stands for a moment to consider, and then she sits down. And eventually, and we can't know how long this took or why she might have made the choice that she did, but eventually she picks up a thread, a loose thread. And as soon as she touches the thread, she sees, she has an insight, the image of a more beautiful and greater garment that could be woven. And she begins again to weave the new garment out of the chaos of the world. And so the story goes. So the question to ponder is, how do we meet the unraveling, knowing it is to be expected, knowing it is a part of nature and culture alike? And what role do we play in turning chaos into beauty? Nelson Mandela writes, when we can sit in the face of insanity or dislike and be free from the need to make it different, then we are free. And in the Satipatthana Sutta refrain, the Buddha says one abides, established in the four foundations of mindfulness, one abides diligent, clear knowing, and mindful, free from desires and discontent in regard to the world. So I don't think Venerable Mandela and the Buddha are saying that we stop weaving and stirring. It has more to do with how we understand and embrace suffering and disappointment and beauty and begin again and again. So some of this, I believe, has to do with the frame of mind we take each step when we're walking through the world. What are we thinking? What are we viewing? What are we believing? And can we catch that thread of thought and kind of, you know, make a U-turn to look at how our thoughts might be feeding a level of suffering that is more of a request of letting go. So here's some questions I'd like for you to think about. And these will all be on recording, so you don't need to write them, but just think about this kind of habituated way that we move through the world with certain beliefs that don't always get questioned because we haven't gone to the cave, you know. Or we don't have time to go to the cave, but we can just kind of drop these questions in. A few questions here. How many hungry dogs have you encountered lately? And how are you relating to this chaos? How do you brace yourself from the harsh blows of life? And at what cost? Maybe the cost is biting your teeth down to the nubs. I don't know. What are you believing or convinced of when you find yourself triggered or kind of caught or snagged? What stories are you telling yourself about who should have known better? Are you taking what's happening as a personal experience? You might ask, have people before me felt this way? And where else in the world are people feeling similarly gripped or contracted? Another question, kind of snap out question could be, do you believe how it is now is how it will always be? And can you know this for certain? Are you insisting that this situation be other than it is right now in this moment? And is that possible in this moment? What if some of what we're labeling chaos was simply another perspective, a call for curiosity or more intimacy? And where in your body do you feel most contracted or restrained? Where you feel the weight of holding the weight of being dead right. And what or who do you need to let go of and, in order to breathe more deeply, more freely, in order to begin again? Questioning our views, the belief underneath the snag is first part of our practice to see its impermanence, to see how it's impersonal, to see the dukkha for what it is. The Buddha tells us that suffering is to be understood, the cause of suffering is to be abandoned, the release of suffering is to be realized, to be directly experienced. And there's a way to do all this through the path that our practice represents, the Eightfold Practice, Eightfold Path. And we're taught, which I truly believe, that we don't do this practice just for ourselves. Our practice belongs to the world. And the Buddha talks to us, teaches on compassion, karuna, which is a profound active desire for all beings to be free from suffering and its causes. And compassion is a fundamental virtue rooted in a deep understanding of interconnectedness or to the fabric of life that the old woman is weaving. And again, none of what disturbs us would disturb us if we didn't actually get that we belong to each other. Dr. King writes, we've heard it probably many times before, that all life is inner. Related. Somehow we're caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. This is the interrelated structure of reality. It's not just an idea, it's the structure of our reality that we're woven together. And I believe this is the beauty the wise woman is weaving. And the wholesome seeds she is stirring. And as the story concludes, it says, so be thankful when things fall apart. And when we have a chance, go to the cave, calm yourself, look at the chaos, pick up a thread. And through your practice of mindfulness, help the wise woman who is weaving the world again and again. So, this is what I wanted to offer as a way of looking at how we return to love. Again and again. When I first submitted this description, I thought, oh, forgiveness makes sense. But when I look at the world and ask my own heart what's on top, and what we're facing, so many of us at this time, the ground of love and compassion and making space in our heart seems to be the cry, if you will. And this sense of not belonging is, or being in it alone, or feeling kind of lost and numb, or Yeah, many things. You know, we're really not alone in it. It just feels that way. So what I'd like to do now is invite you into just a small group to touch in. And I want you to explore a question. Kind of share what is your thread that you are picking up, are the seeds you're tending right now at this time. I was speaking to a dear one recently, and she said part of what she's looking at is what is mine to do in service to the world, but what is mine to do? So I just want you to give each other a few moments to just share how the story landed, what your sense of a thread is for you. And maybe you don't feel like sharing when you're in the small group, but what I would like for you to do is be there and just support the other people that are there. Just listen. Hold space and heart for them. And we'll only do this for a few moments. And then we'll come back and have a Q&A, or then we'll do a guided meditation. I'll have to see what wants to happen. Okay. So I'm thinking, Caroline, that we could be in groups of no more than five and have maybe 10 minutes might be enough for each person to just drop a seed or two in to talk about where you are with this and what's on your heart right now. Okay, 10 minutes, five people in a group. That should do it.
So I'm just setting that up now. Okay, so I'm going to open all the rooms now.
Thank you. We'll see you back soon. Well, welcome back, everyone. I hope that was a nice connection for you and a way to do a little weaving together, a little quilting together in your own little small group. Yeah, I think this kind of inquiry is you know, the question I was inviting you to engage around is like a repeat question. I mean, I think it changes depending on the situations that we're in, what we call up, what our choices might be, and how our choices might be informed. So I hope that was connecting for you. Compassion is so core to this story, this idea of getting ourselves still, this idea, which is not a new idea for many of us as practitioners, but turning our attention, going into the cave to center ourselves, to abide, to take refuge, is really a turning. It's not something that is always so immediately available to us. We have to sometimes literally get up, stretch, turn away from what's here so that we can see more clearly. And there's a lot of things that can block our compassion these days. We get bumped and bruised, and there's a lot of ways that people I'm working with feel like these times are pretty insane. And just to find a sense of ground in the midst of it, and the challenge to keep our heart open in the face of it, can feel very overwhelming. So a big question for me often is, how do I keep a clean heart? I grew up in the Baptist church, and there was a song that we sang, "Give me a clean heart so that I can serve you." It's kind of like that. How do we keep the heart clean and purified of toxins so that the seeds we are stirring, these roots that serve present and future generations, are well nourished, warm, attended over the cauldron fire of life? So I'd like to invite us into a meditation to look at how we kind of take an anticoagulant to have the heart be freed up of any clogs and snags or congestion that might be there based on how we are viewing or how we are in relationship to what life is throwing to us these days. So I invite you to join me and to get comfortable in your seat on the floor, however your position is for now. We'll take some time here. And the point of this practice is, you know, just kind of the exercising of the heart muscle, letting go and releasing as an act of compassion, and as also a way of kind of being with the harmonics of humanity, how we harmonize with something beyond any sense of short-mindedness or self-interest. I'm speaking of an expanse here. So let's establish a sense of stability in our seats and mindfulness. I might invite you to, as you sit on the earth in your seat, connected to the earth, to just sense into the space that's in front of you. You might want to close your eyes and or lower them. Just sense the space that's in front of you. space that is behind you. Space on the right and the left of you, above and below. Space all around, space also the same space as inside of you, beyond the walls of where you are. It's a space of awareness. Begin to settle your body in your seat, soften the body in the seat. Sense the body as a stable presence with you here and now. Relaxing, the body is foundational to any insight practice. And soften the face and release the shoulders. And invite a softening in the chest and in the upper back, belly and lower back, and the hips. And as the body relaxes, tension softens. We can also relax the mental activity, letting go of any tightness, pressure, or the agitation associated with thinking. Now connecting with the breath. The sensation of breath. The movement of breath and resting on the exhales of the breath. And pausing in that moment of spaciousness at the end of each inhale and exhale. This relationship with the breath settles the nervous system. And as you continue to settle in the body and the breath, you might notice a subtle hum or vibration just beneath your skin. Just softly notice these sensations. The sensation of breathing is the body's first and most intimate language. Yeah, you can relax here in this quiet intelligence of the body, not through effort, but just through awareness. And now let's establish an intention to let go. We said intention to free ourselves from this burden of separation, from this burden of effort. And we set an intention to question ourselves and to go against our habits. And take a moment to affirm your sincere wish to be free from strife, from fatigue, from dis-ease that you carry. The contraction, the coagulation you hold, the bracing toward life. You can set an intention to let that go for now, knowing it's not a permanent state, but we're inviting this ease in this practice. And as we go through this practice, you can keep 50% of your attention on what I'm saying and the other 50% on your body and your breath. Staying soft and receptive. May I be at ease. And now I want you to ponder the piles of chaos that you face in your life right now. And not to ponder it as a thought, but where in your body do you feel most gripped or grieved about it? And who or what do you need to forgive in order to let go and breathe more deeply, more freely, so that you can begin again? Maybe the threads that need tending in your heart mind right now is with someone you have harmed or feel tension toward. You might bring them to mind and see them. You might say, I see you. I acknowledge the harm I have done and the tension I carry toward you. And I release you from my judgments, my assumptions, my fear and bitterness and need to control you. I release you. And there's a part of me that is open to what I may not understand about your experience. I honor your humanity. I wish you well. You're just like me. Take a little time here and feel your sincere wish to be free from this in this moment, at this time. Notice how this offering changes your experience. Notice what's happening and what's changing inside of you. And just imagine their life being safe and protected from harm. Taking your time here, staying with your breath and your body as a comfort, as a refuge. Or maybe the release you need to let go of is someone who has harmed you. Maybe that's the thread. If so, bring them to mind and see them at a safe distance. This person who has harmed you. You might say, I see you. And I acknowledge the harm you have done and the tension I carry toward you. I get it. And I'm letting go of hatred and ill will and my need to control you. I release you from the harshness in my heart, my assumptions and my projections of you, the narrow way that I see you. I'm doing my best to honor your humanity, and I wish you well. Being at ease with this. Imagine their life being safe, protected. Notice how what's happening is change and change is notice how what's happening is changing in your heart mind. You can let this person just gently fade away. It's possible that what needs your compassion is a group of people you've been conditioned to judge or fear. You know who they are. We can bring them to mind. Notice what happens when you bring them to mind. You might say to them, I see you. We belong to each other. I care about the harm you have done and the tension I carry toward you. I let go of hatred and ill will and my need to control you, releasing my judgments, my assumptions, my projections, my narrow view of you. And you might say in your mind that while I continue to weave the world and stir the seeds of well-being, I also honor your humanity and wish you well. Where is your breath? How's your body? Soften, rest. Feel the goodness of your intention, your wish for all beings to be well and free from suffering. And let them fade for now. And finally, in this practice, what is very likely to need your attending and stirring is an aspect of yourself that you hold harshly or feel disconnected from. An aspect of yourself that feels heavy or lost, confused, numb, afraid. Imagine this part of you being very close, even in your arms. And you might say to this part of you, this is how it is right now, but not forever. May I see the world with quiet eyes. May I offer care without resistance, knowing I may be met with gratitude, anger, or resistance. May I offer love, knowing I don't control the course of life, suffering, or death. May I be a good friend to myself. May I have the strength and insight to meet the world with care. May I be safe, content, healthy. May I live with ease. We'll take another couple of minutes just to have you focus on a phrase or one of these focal points using your own phrases. And I invite you to continue to feel your wish for the relief of suffering. For all beings, without exception. And now allow all the phases to drop away. Let's just be here together. And as the wise tale concluded, says, be thankful when things fall apart. And when you have a chance, find the cave, calm yourself, look at the chaos, pick up a loose thread, and help the old woman who is weaving the world again and again. So I'll call us all back together. And would like to have a few moments for any questions you have about your practice, this practice. Any insights you want to share or ahas for you are welcomed at this time. And I'll invite Caroline in to support this part of the practice.
Thank you, Ruth. Yeah, so just to remind everybody, if you'd like to come on screen and ask Ruth a question, then please just raise your hand. You can find the hand icon in the toolbar at the bottom of the screen. And I will invite you to unmute yourself and bring yourself on. Alternatively, you can write a question in the chat. If you can just preface it with question, that would be helpful. And Caroline, I can see that you'd like to come on, so please feel free to unmute yourself.
Greetings, everyone, and a deep bow of gratitude, as always, Ruth, for the message. I lift up the finding of a new pattern, the appreciation that we can hold in chaos what the next is. And I simply wanted to share that's the place for me, as we know that there are need for new systems. And to me, that's the new pattern. So we'll see what happens with those porcupine needles.
Very good. It's good to see you. See you again.
So, I think I'm going to have trouble pronouncing your name. Axolotl
Yes. Yeah.
Piltzin,
Thank you.
and
Yeah, it's a shallow. It seems okay. Thank you for the practice, first of all, much needed. I think one thing that comes for me at times is the feeling of being tired when these situations happen over and over again. And I know situations that happen before I was born, and to my ancestors and everybody, and even animals. I mean, I can't forget about the species, the other species too, trees and so forth, not just me. For me, sometimes I think, like, what can I do to, again, deal with this tiredness, right? Of like, oh, here we go again, here we go again. And again, 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 like the lady that's weaving, right? But I do things, for my community, and I do as much as I can. But I have that magic wand to make this a magical world. I can only do it like where I am and in my surroundings. And I feel blessed that I feel like I live in paradise at this point in my life. But it's like you get this guilt feeling, right? Like that others are not, right, in this situation. So that comes up too, the tiredness and like a survivor's guilt, I guess, kind of feeling like, how could they not be? And I wish I could switch places with them, That comes up.
Yeah.
I wonder if you have any recommendations so I can continue, And I rely a lot on nature, I rely a lot on trees, and I love to hug trees, and like you said, I feed myself with this energy
Yeah.
to keep going.
Yeah, thank you for that. Say your name again. I'd love to be able to pronounce it.
Yes, it's Asholopilsi. I usually put the phonics here, I forgot today.
Ashalapitsi. Ashalapitsi.
It means little venerable axolotl. It's a new name I just got last year.
Okay. Well, thank you. And thank you for your question. I don't think you're alone in that. And what I hear mostly is your compassion speaking, your compassion for the world. And it is a mighty time. And there is a lot. Funny one thing I think sometimes is that there's a liability in being aware, because then you're kind of seeing all of it and feeling all of it. And one of the teachings that I rely on is when we feel fatigued from compassion, then we want to call up a wisdom principle. And when we are clear about what's happening, sometimes we need to call up compassion principle. And it sounds like nature is definitely a piece of refuge for you. I would also encourage you to get rest. It's hard to, if the woman in the cave is weaving, stirring the seeds, it's hard to realize immediately that what you're doing makes a big difference. It can feel like it's not enough, right? It can feel like we're, you know, it's, I'm privileged. I'm in this cave. I'm off on retreat, right? Or I'm doing something. But those are mighty somethings when you are tending intentionally and sending prayers and offering metta. And resting is also, what do we want to call it? A way to meet the world, grounded, rested. So it's a lot of things in our conditioning that says, you know, we shouldn't have this privilege. There's so many other people suffering, but there's people suffering, there's people praying, there's people weaving, there's people on the streets, there's people in caves, there's it, and it's hard to see how all of these things, how a lot is happening. And it's just a funky ride sometimes, and it just sucks sometimes, right? But it's not all the time. And we can look at the moments when that's peaked, like your fatigue is peaked, where it just doesn't feel like you can do anything else. And also notice those moments of beauty when you're in nature and you have the tree at your back and you can smell the fragrances and be nurtured by the animals. All of this is part of stirring the seeds. You know, the world needs your wisdom and your health, you know. So it's really important to, the fatigue makes sense, and it's important to make sure you're well rested so that you can keep doing what must be done. So I just want to affirm the realness of that. Turn down the volume of the guilt of it, turn up the volume of getting rest and renewal and offering what you can. Yeah. Hope that's helpful.
Thank you.
Cynthia, would you like to come on?
Thank you. Ruth, thank you so much. I live just outside Washington, D.C., and had the pleasure of doing a day long with you 7, 8 years ago with you and Hugh Byrne. So it's just wonderful to hear you and receive your guidance. What came to mind when you were doing the guided compassion practice is another compassion phrase. May I be healed, or may I find healing, and may you be healed, may you find healing. Because I really think that, I mean, I can see it individually and collectively. There is so much, I don't know, you know, pain, feelings of being left out and not heard and seen. I mean, sometimes I have to really look below the surface, even with the most grievous things that are happening, or that I have experienced in my own life. So that's just what came to mind for me. And I thank you very much for
Yeah.
today. Thank you.
Beautiful. Those are beautiful additions. Thank you.
Ruth, we have a question in the chat that I will read out for you from Lee, who says, "Hi, Ruth. With your topic today at the beginning of this Sangha, can you recommend further study, e.g., a book or video on YouTube?"
A book or video of
I think he's.
anything in particular?
I think he's referring to the topic of forgiveness, which was the title of the session.
Oh, okay. I would have to think about there's one that I'm thinking of, but it's not coming right up top of mind. So what I could do is look that up and provide it so that it can go out in the notes.
We can
And
post
those specifically on forgiveness.
that underneath the recording. Yeah.
Fantastic. The Brahma Viharas is kind of the broad category of that this forgiveness piece is kind of tucked under. So I've often coupled forgiveness practice with metta, forgiveness practice with compassion, because it kind of unsticks the heart being stuck. So sometimes the references could be the Brahma Viharas or loving kindness and compassion. And in my book, I have a section on forgiveness in the Mindful of Race book, where we are looking at that directly. So I'll look into a couple of resources to share with you. Thank you for that question.
Dawn, would you like to come on?
The first, well, thank you so much for this opportunity to sit with Ruth King. I've wanted to for a long time. The first part of the story spoke very directly to me. I felt like I really connected with that. But I have to admit, I don't know. I don't understand what stirring the seeds means or represents. Can you give me an example in real life about what that means?
Yeah, I can kind of put a spin on it, because I think there's lots of spins that could go on it. I would say it's tied to our intentions. It's tied to preparing the soil for generations to come so that what blooms in our consciousness is well seeded, if you will, or thoughtful. I think of the seeds as things that will bloom at some point, and that there's meaning in that that serves future generations. So I would associate it more with life going on, being well fed with good intention and goodwill. That's how I
So
might assume.
meta practice would be a form of sowing seeds.
I see the seeds as seeds that are being prepared and heated and kind of warmed by earth. And then I see this tapestry as something we're doing with our hands, through our artistry, through our service to the world. And the seeds I would associate with how consciousness is actually being nurtured for the future
Okay.
generations. So I think it's not meant to be a literal thing so much, but more like a bit of a dance to play with around that. But that's what I think. That's a great question, and I think that's how I would associate it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Don. Anything else before we come to an end here? I hope you enjoyed that story. It's one of my favorites. Yeah. So maybe this is a good time to just close our time together and offer the merit of our effort, our care and attention to our practice, that our practice is in service, that everything we've gained, delighted in, shared, taken in, discovered about ourselves, may that be an offering out near and far in all directions for the benefit of a beautiful tapestry and many, many seeds of well-being throughout the world.